97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Boy, you gotta love these temperatures. A little bit less uncomfortable, I would say. Although we have rain in the forecast for tonight. And I think for tomorrow night, I was at Belle Reve earlier today for the first practice rounds. Tomorrow is the Pro-Am, and they tee off in the morning, so we're hoping that the weather doesn't interfere. However, what I would say, and you can hear this from Dave Murray, I think he's going to join us live tomorrow, is that for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, this looks perfect. I mean, this is what they were kind of hoping for later in August with temperatures that weren't just going to crush these players and the fans. Like when I was out there, Sue, for the PGA Championship, I remember one time following Tiger because that was always dangerous.
Well, yeah.
And when I was getting up, I think I was following this on the ninth hole, and the crush of people between 9 and 10, and the first hole is kind of right up there too, was just insane. It really was. And, you know, not only claustrophobic, but it's hotter than all get out.
Oh,
and people are sweating like crazy. Now, I'm not going to tell you that you're not going to be a little warm out there, because in the sun, it's still going to be a little warm, but it could be a lot worse, a lot worse.
How did your parking work out today?
Well, I don't even know how much I should talk about this, because I have been gifted some really good parking by my dear friend, Jeff Drew, who will never, ever, ever let me live this down. So even for the fans, this is going to really make me sound like an elitist, but let's face it, I'm already there. Like, if you're going to go, you are supposed to park at the family arena, and then, you know, there's a shuttle ride.
There's a shuttle, yeah.
Right. But even for the media, there's a lot down from Ladue Road and it's pretty easy. I've done it before. You just pull in, and then you get on the shuttle, and it's not a long ride or anything. It's still pretty good. But I got onto Hunter Farms, which essentially puts me to a gate where you walk right into the 15th and 16th hole, essentially. So I have beyond rockstar parking that I will use, and I think I'm going to go every day. I really do think
Why
I'm going to go every day.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I would. Yeah, of course.
Well, and I have, like I said, I have a credential, so I'm able to go into certain areas, you know, that fans would not be able to. Like, I was right down on the range with these players this morning, and it was really cool to see them. So a lot of
that
fun.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
To actually be next to them after you watch them so much on TV.
Well, and then, like I said, I was just sitting there as this guy was talking to Ludwig Aberg, and he gave him a little quiz. I put this up on X, formerly Twitter. He asked him to name the top 10, you know, countries that have the most golf courses, and he was struggling on that a little bit, but he came off as just such a normal dude. Like, I guess he played golf at Texas Tech. He's from Sweden, but, you know, he has a little bit of an accent, but he's an American. He's talked, well, I don't know if he is a citizen, but he certainly
What's
can communicate.
What's his name? I'm going to look up.
Ludwig Aberg.
Okay.
Ludwig.
Ludwig.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of American kids named Ludwig, do you?
Aberg?
A-B-E-R-G.
Okay.
Good-looking guy. Very polite. Had a nice chat with him.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
It really is with a V.
Right.
I thought you were
Ludwig.
Pronouncing like the W like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. He's
Sue
a nice-looking young man.
Sue, Fred told me before the segment started here, and I was unaware of this. He had not disclosed this previously. Maybe it was because of HEPA reasons, that he has poison ivy right now.
Yeah.
Did you know about that?
I did.
Why am I the last person to get to know this?
Because as soon as I told you, it would go out to the audience.
Oh, okay.
So
and you were worried about that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Now you're comfortable with me talking about it because of what?
Because it's under control.
Oh, okay. What happened?
Oh, you know, maybe a week ago or so, I was cutting weeds in the backyard like I always do for 25 years in this yard. Never got poison ivy. And then all of a sudden, a week ago, I noticed I had some bug bites. I thought they were bug bites. But it takes like a week for like a gestation period.
I don't think I knew that. Like, did you know that?
It blows up after day 7 or something like that. And now my wrists and my arms look like Quasimodo.
You've spent a whole week not telling me this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so.
When did he tell you?
Just yesterday.
Okay.
But you know, and you do that calamine lotion, you know, that old pink stuff
that
you put on it.
Did that help?
It didn't help enough.
But I mean, how much is it painful or itchy or both?
It was both.
It was painful,
mainly itchy.
Okay.
But then my doctor got me on some steroids, and that's really working fast. I just started those yesterday, and I'm in, you know, like no pain at all.
They give you prednisone? Do you know?
I don't know. I didn't look at it. I just thought it was a
Fred pays such close attention. He's the medical editor at KMOX. I ask him what medication. He doesn't even know that. That's good.
I just thought he was going to pump iron and get rid
of it. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yes.
A little different kind of steroid. But
no.
Yeah. But
I'm very pro steroids because that really helped me a lot.
I'm glad that you're okay. And I've to my knowledge, never had poison ivy or poison oak. Is there, like, I don't know if this is true. I'm not trying to spread rumor. But is it possible that some people get it and some people don't, or
well, that's
not
what I thought, because I went my whole life without getting it,
right?
But I guess not. I don't know.
Have you ever had soup?
I remember in sixth grade camp, my friend Jennifer Quinn said, let's sit in this thing of poison ivy and we'll rub it on ourselves and get out of school. And so she sat down and rubbed on, and I did too, and I got nothing, and she had a terrible case and had to come with Calamoid lotion and the whole nine yards. She's mortified by it to this day. But what are you going to do?
It's a great story, though.
Yeah,
let's
it is
say.
A good story.
I should have been suspicious, because a couple weeks ago, Joyce got it in my backyard.
Oh.
So. Well, so it's somehow, it's. Well, I blame Joyce. It was probably in Joyce's yard, and then it came over from Joyce's.
I do not blame Joyce.
I think it infected Fred's yard.
There's
only one, you know, one takeaway from that.
Are you going to kill the poison ivy? I
thought I did.
Oh.
So apparently now I didn't kill it dead.
So what's weird is, like, you know, we're talking about golf here a little bit. A lot of times, you know, you go, well, especially people that play like me, you're searching for your balls a lot, and you'll see poison ivy, or someone will say, hey, that's poison ivy. So I've, you know, been around it before. I thought I've been exposed to it, but I've never had anything,
well,
so
good.
That's good.
And leaves
poison
of three,
oak, isn't poison oak
be.
A thing, too? What is it? Leaves of three,
leaves
what?
Of let three, it be. Let them be.
There you go. Aren't they, isn't there a little red on those leaves, too, or not?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't
what
know
do
about
I know?
That.
What do I know? Hey, last week we talked, and we had a great visit with Tim Fitch, who was the former St. Louis County Police Chief. He's a regular on the Reardon Roundtable as well. But these flock cameras, man, people are fed up with these things, and they're like shooting them up and destroying them and all this stuff. And there's this guy online who's trying to, you know, run a website to tell people how to disarm them. So the LA Times did another story about this today, and they talked about this guy, Adam Heimerman, who was seeing surveillance cameras on his way to work as a river guide in East Tennessee. And he didn't like it very much. And they point out that there's, and we were talking about this last week, there's 130,000 of these automatic license plate readers that are around the country. They're not taking video. They're telling, you know, still photographs, but they can read your license plate and communicate with different departments. So there's a crowdsourced tracker that is called deflock.org, and it's an AI assisted device that law enforcement, and Tim was talking about this, law enforcement likes it, you know, because it can help them track down the bad guys. But the public are increasingly not crazy about this. And they talk about this Heimerman guy who is running for Congress. He probably doesn't have a chance because he's an independent candidate, but He's accused of, in East Tennessee, the Blount County Sheriff's Office alleges that Heimerman shot four of the cameras, including one near a church where worshipers sat inside. He would not tell the Washington Post details of the case, but he says there's widespread frustration over local governments that kept using the cameras despite community pushback, which I think is true, but I don't know that that means you go out and shoot them and then shoot them close to a church where people are in there worshiping. But there are these how-to videos that have spread online, and they demonstrate how, in theory, to disable the cameras from collecting the footage, and they use wire cutters and heavy gloves. There's college students, computer engineers. There's a U.S. Air Force engineer that have all now been accused of vandalizing the devices. I would probably be pretty scared to go up and vandalize something that's taking photos and pictures of you, because you would think that they would catch you. But they talked about Detroit, and in Winona, Minnesota, all eight of the city's readers were cut down and stolen recently. So that's crazy that people are reacting this way. I have mixed feelings, because some of them are just being, you know, vandalized as well, where they're painting over them or something like that. I see these things every once in a while, and I have mixed feelings, only because I know they help cops find the bad guys. But I'm also a little creeped out about having cameras everywhere.
You know, President Trump was asked about that yesterday in one of his impromptu news conferences. And he said, yeah, I've heard about the controversy. He said, but we're looking into it. I don't really have anything to say about it yet, but I'll get back to you as soon as I get all the details.
All right.
Yeah, so, like, I'm not going to Tucker Carlson, who has just completely lost his mind, he's out there encouraging people, apparently, to vandalize them. And his quote is, "It's sober, decent, patriot Americans who believe that the promises of their country, flock was not part of the country they signed up for. No one asked their permission to steal their images and spy on their conversations. They don't think that makes them feel safer. They understand it's stripping them of their basic humanity." It's not listening to your conversations, by the way. So that's misleading. But there is something, you know, about having cameras just everywhere.
I know.
And I think they do overseas more often,
yeah,
right?
I think so.
They do.
So,
they do.
And, you know, Sue, we mentioned, look, there's traffic cameras everywhere, right?
Yeah. Well, there are. But, you know, that's interesting, too, because there's often ones where I think, I can't see that. I want to see this. There's not enough for me. I'd like to have more.
Right.
It's, I'm just saying.
It's a fine line, perhaps.
Yes.
But the way that this is kind of, it's like the data center thing. You know, that thing kind of took off, and this is kind of becoming a thing with the flock cameras, too. I mean, let's face it. The last 2 weeks, I've seen flock cameras in headlines in multiple publications way more than I ever had in my whole life.
Well, so. And you know what? It catches bad guys a lot. Remember, we would see them, oh, he left the house. Oh, he's going this way. Oh, send the police.
Right.
I mean, it really is helpful as far as that goes. But
all right, we got Sue's News. That's not a good promo for that, but that's coming up next.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Oh, you guys, it's National Fajita Day.
Oh.
I'm in a big fajita phase. I like the steak one. I like the chicken. I like the shrimp. But they have one somewhere that does a little bit of each. Oh, I tear up with joy. It's so good.
Yeah, that's a good combo.
Oh,
right?
It's so good.
The problem, I'm just going to be honest with you. The problem I have with fajitas is too much food. It's just
okay,
so much food.
What? Can I
get
a buzzer?
I don't have that problem. Yeah.
I don't have that problem either. It's so delicious. It's also National Ice Cream Pie Day. Oh, man. They have good ones, of course, at Dairy Queen, but they also have them at Baskin-Robbins. I like the mint chip, if I were eating this, with a nice thin crust of cookie.
Is that like an ice cream sandwich? An ice cream pie?
You've not had an ice cream pie?
I don't think I have.
I believe an ice cream pie is different than an ice cream cake.
Just...
Right?
Yeah, it's just a pie, so there's no cake on it.
Right.
So it's just a pie with a crust. I guess my mother used to make these, and ice cream is the body of it.
Wow, that's a delicacy I haven't had.
Oreo cookies with frozen, and you have to put something in there so it cuts better, but yeah. Oh.
Fred, I think I'm with you, unless I've, you know, had one and I was...
Because
I've had cakes, you know, and they're usually just all ice cream. You know what I mean? Like an ice cream cake is just all ice cream. It's just different, maybe different flavors. There's not really cake in there,
well,
is there?
Well, no, yeah, there is. There's a layer of cake.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
All right.
But it's mainly ice cream.
It's also National Mail Order Catalog Day, which we all recall from our utes. Mm-hmm. Remember, you would get something in the mail. It was the JCPenney catalog.
Oh, the JCPenney catalog.
The Sears catalog.
Sears, yeah.
And you would go in there and try to find something.
And as a 12-year-old boy, you'd look at the lingerie.
I bet you would.
I'm just telling you.
Yep, I'm sure you would.
That's all I'll say.
I'm not sure how... Well, I guess it didn't matter if you're that age. 36 years ago today, because I think of like the Long John Page. I mean, was it really that sexy? I guess it doesn't matter. You're 12.
Yeah. You take what you can get.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know?
It was the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I had
my Farrah Fawcett poster and the JCPenney catalog. That pretty much got me through the 70s.
Oh, my gosh. On this day in history, 34 years ago, it was 1992, and Boston Celtics... Larry Bird announced his retirement.
Yeah.
It was in his 13 seasons. He was MVP three times, played in 12 All-Star games, and hit double figures in points, rebounds, and assists 69 times.
What a great era.
It was a great era. With their short shorts, and they're all super tall. You could see some of it, of course, on YouTube. And then 20 years ago today, in 2006... Snakes on a Plane was released. I never saw it. Did you see it, Fred?
I saw it.
It's
just kind of a fun movie, yeah.
Well, here's the deep plot. It stars Samuel L. Jackson. As an FBI agent trying to keep a witness alive aboard an overseas flight, is he trying to keep the... Who brought the snakes?
It's been so long, Sue, and I think I've only seen this movie once. I could not tell you anything more about it. There was a snake, and it was on a plane, and there was Samuel L. Jackson. That's pretty much all I know.
So you saw the movie instead of reading the book.
I saw the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a book?
Was
is that
it
what you
said?
Okay.
Yeah. Can you imagine snakes on a plane?
I
Chapter 1. Oh, gosh. That's hilarious. All right. Sad news this afternoon. ZZ Top drummer Frank Beard has passed away at 77. Now, Beard was a co-founder of the band, and do you know that that band goes all the way back to 1969?
I did know that, yeah.
Wow. And they started as a band called the Moving Sidewalks, and then they became, in July of 1969, ZZ Top. And so Beard was a co-founder with guitarist Billy Gibbons and bassist Dusty Hill. It was Hill who passed away in 2021.
So Billy's still with us?
That means that, yes, Billy is still with us. Beard, ironically, was usually the clean-shaven member.
Ah, right. That's right. Yeah, he's 76 years old. Billy Gibbons is 76 years old. So he's the surviving original member.
It's nice to hear this, though, isn't it? By the way,
Casey classic, right? Yeah, I like that one.
They have a great documentary on them. If you have not seen it, have you seen that one, Mark?
No, I've heard it's very good.
Really good.
Yeah. Okay. They were never one of my favorite bands. Like, I'm not even sure. Actually, I can even say I'm pretty sure I do not own any ZZ Top vinyl.
I know.
Okay? But I mean, I liked a lot of the songs,
right.
And I would have liked to have seen them in concert back in the day.
And believe me, somehow, because I feel the same way about ZZ Top. But when you watch this documentary, it's still really good.
I love rock documentaries.
Yeah.
They're always
so good.
I don't
think I cared about them at all when they were big.
In the 80s?
Just, now you learn more about them.
Yeah, I think you would like it too, Fred. It really is a good documentary. All right, you know how we try to keep us all hip on what the kids are saying so Fred can incorporate
it into
his conversation and drop it with his sons and they can all be impressed. All right. Gen Z has now turned the word polyester into slang insult for anything low quality or inauthentic. So, Fred, you're going to have to say, have to claim things are polyester. Okay.
So my polyester shirt could actually be polyester.
Probably.
Yes. There's a TikTok where an 18-year-old is talking about life he wants in his 20s. He has a penthouse in New York City, enjoys fancy drinks at a coffee shop, while an automated AI agent does his work, spends his afternoons playing tennis, blah, blah, blah. The top comment is polyester lifestyle. So if you can work that in.
I have not heard that one at all yet.
I haven't either. It's coming. And it has over 45,000 likes, so the kids love it. I think that's just kind of great. All right, I find this interesting. Uber Eats says it plans to start using drones for some of its delivery services in Texas. Now, market specifically Dallas and Houston. So I'm going to see if Jeff will try it. You should see if your son will try it.
Well, we've heard Amazon was doing something like this, or they had planned to, so this probably is kind of like the next phase, right?
It is, and there is a guy in Texas who, at a TV station, they sent him out to do a story on it. And sure enough, Little Caesars is doing it, and they have a four-mile radius.
Okay.
And so he ordered one, and sure enough, you watch the drone picks it up. It's especially good for pizza because it's flat, and it easily fits in the drone, and it keeps it keeps it level.
Right.
So when it arrives, it's still, he opened it up and there was still steam.
So
this is going to be a really big deal.
If I'm a little hungry and I'm down in Texas and I got my rifle or shotgun out, maybe, I mean, I'm just saying.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well,
and you're not shooting a flock camera. You can shoot down
I mean, that might not go well every delivery.
You guys, but to see it actually, because they've talked about it forever, but to see them actually go and deliver it was awesome.
Maybe that makes more sense than having those little robots that carry it across the city.
Well, it definitely
and
does.
Run into things.
It definitely does, which is why I was like, this is the way to go. Who needs ka-kunk, ka-kunk on the sidewalk? And then it screws everything up and it takes just as long. And
but
they
you get a little turbulence and the cheese is going to be everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, but, maybe it's just calm in Texas. Okay. They're not going to send it out in bad weather. But you don't have to tip. You should like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying. It's a robot. I look forward to it. Just a 4-mile radius right now. Okay, I did the story the other day about some instances where celebrities had crazy encounters. I wanted to do two more. No surprise here, Joe Keery, who plays Steve from Stranger Things, said a fan once asked him for a lock of his hair. He declined.
Yeah, good.
And James McAvoy was approached by a woman who told him he was her hall pass and her partner was cool with them getting together. And he said, quote, "I'm married, but thank you very much. That's so nice of you."
Generous.
Very generous.
It's very generous. And Aubrey Plaza says a lot of fans have asked her to hit or slap them, and she has no idea why. What?
People are weird.
And then finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Now that engines are quieter, many companies like Ford, BMW, and Volkswagen all have to add fake engine noises to their cars.
Stop!
That's real.
I don't like that!
This morning you said you would bomb the S out of Oman if they got in the way of reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Would you say you're out of patience with Oman as strategic
partners? No, I don't think they behave very well, but we'd handle them very easily, just like we do other things.
Well, that was yesterday. The president really, I don't think, has said anything today, although he did write on Truth Social, the Hormuz Strait is open and operating. I think there is a fair amount of skepticism about that. But let's chat once again with Jacob Olidort, Chief Research Officer and Director of the American Security at America First Policy Institute. Jacob, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Great to be with you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So what about the statement that the Strait is open or remains open? We seem to have, you know, back and forth on this, whether it's open, whether it's not. The president insists sometimes it is, and then the media reports that it's not. What's your best, you know, analysis right now of where we are with the Strait in particular?
Right. Well, so I think to put it into historical context, I think this is more open than it's been in 5 decades, and certainly getting to a more stable place. Look, at the end of the day, the reason you have the Saudis and the Emiratis having alternative pipelines moving energy through there is because they've known that this is not a reliable waterway to depend on. It has a lot of risk from the Iranians, and of course, they're acting up. But at the end of the day, we have a naval blockade in place, which every day is placing economic strain and pressure on the regime. And we have a growing consensus among our partners that Iran is a threat and that this is in their best interest. And now the question is really to get all of our global partners who rely on this waterway more to do their part in taking it over. But I think at the end of the day, we are shepherding it into a new era of stability.
So when the chief negotiator, one of the negotiators for Iran, says that the Strait of Hormuz will remain shut until Washington meets the conditions contained in an interim agreement reached in June, I guess that was the memo of understanding, they say it's shut. So how do you know what really is happening? You can see the traffic in the Strait, and it's moving at an acceptable pace?
Well, there are two things here. First of all, we have to remember this is the last chip that the Iranians have to play. I mean, they don't really have any ability to mount greater military kind of threats. I mean, certainly I don't want to minimize the threat, but in the way that they had been prior to Epic Fury and certainly Midnight Hammer before. But point number two, and this is really important as we're getting these statements out of different elements inside of Iran's leadership, they're speaking for a domestic constituency. We have to remember this is a new team at the top, and it's not even the B team, it's the C team.
Yeah.
And there are elements, even among the IRGC, that are competing among one another and among the clerical elite to outmaneuver each other. Who's more who's more able to escalate, who's more able to stand up for their destructive agenda. So I think that ultimately is in our best interest to have them at loggerheads with one another.
You know, one of the things, Jacob, that I think a lot of the American people are thinking, and we're doing this based, I'll just speak for myself, but I think other people are, you know, kind of noodling on this the same way. You got a president that really does what he says he's going to do. He makes threats and he follows through with those threats. So there have been a lot of threats here with Iran, and we know that we've hammered them pretty hard, but the president seems to indicate, well, if they're not going to negotiate, we're going to hit them harder, we're going to harm them, you know, all this stuff. But we don't do that. So two questions here. Why aren't we doing that? And how are the Iranians able to fire back and still hit targets? I know that that stuff is minimized and there's probably rogue, you know, actions that are taking place. But why can't we go in and just finish the job militarily?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's an important one. And I think I take it back to, look, we have a little bit of time still on our hands. I mean, really, even beyond the midterms. I mean, the president can take this however he wants, and it's proceeding in the right direction. So we don't have to use that military force in that way today. But I think the other part of it, too, we are trying to manage. It's not just the regime itself. And by the way, I mean, that is because they still have those drone capabilities, mm-hmm. the domestic manufacturing. But it's because we're trying to shape the conditions in the neighborhood. And so you see that pressure on Oman, which is exactly right, and other partners trying to shape those conditions so that once it's completely finished, that everything else is in place to get it in a stable condition.
So what happens next? Because it just seems to be this is stalled and then something comes out and Trump says something and we're in this cycle right now, especially now that the memo of understanding has expired, although, you know, the president pretty much declared that over early July. So we knew the conditions weren't being met, but they still seemingly are holding out for some diplomatic efforts, right?
Well, I think also two things. I think the memorandum of understanding served several important purposes. One of them, of course, was to account for the global energy markets and some of the domestic price fluctuations. But part of it also was to really call Iranians bluff. They have violated now the most important international understanding of nations, the freedom of navigation. It's one nation doing that. And so right now, I think it's look, to see what kind of pressure we can get out. I think it's in our interest as well, I'd say, for this infighting to continue with the regime. While we are sort of marginalizing other proxies, Hezbollah in Lebanon, hopefully the militias as well in Iraq at some point, too. I mean, the new government there is taking a close look. So, again, all of that, I mean, at the end of the day, the American people have to understand the context that this is a five-decade-long regime of terror that we are really unwinding. And that takes a little bit of time, but so far that time is on our side. And the overall direct impact because of this has been, I don't want to be flippant, but I mean, it hasn't been as big as some of the media narratives have portrayed. And our military footprint has been fairly, fairly self-contained as well. So I think all of that is important context.
Jacob Olodort back with us. He is the director of American Security at the America First Policy Institute. A couple weeks ago, I don't know if you and I talked about this because you've been on, you know, somewhat recently, but I haven't heard anyone else talk about this. Ted Cruz encouraged and urged the president to provide weapons to the anti-government demonstrators in Iran. Is that a serious line of thought here, or should it be?
It's a good question. You know, obviously I have no visibility and, you know, if those conversations even are being had. You know, I suspect, you know, the senator is obviously doing his part to give advice and consent. Kind of looking, you know, obviously there's the overall policy being happening, but he's sort of trying to address other angles that might be adjacent. On that specifically, I simply don't know. I mean, so much of it obviously is circumstantial and dependent on what reality looks like on the ground, too.
So, well, and, you know, so some of this is obviously political because you got the midterms coming up here. You got gas prices that are staying high. There's frustration, I think, amongst Republicans that are kind of keeping quiet. They're hearing from their constituents, but the president's moving forward the way that he wants to move forward. I just, you know, I've been concerned from the very beginning here with the timeline kind of getting way extended. And just the lack of focus on just finishing the job. Now, again, I know this is tough. And, you know, even though Trump talks a big game and a few months ago he was talking about wiping them off the planet, he's simply not going to do that to civilians. And there have to be military targets. So that's what makes this even trickier at this point. But I guess a lot of people would say, wait, how many more military targets can we have, you know, that we haven't wiped out?
That's right. And no, and you and I have talked about as well. I mean, what does finishing the job look like militarily? You know, the fact is also there are maybe targets even or ways of thinking about this outside of the borders of Iran that actually might be important as well. And I mentioned Hezbollah. So I think, you know, bringing that towards, you know, a different place of resolution would be important. The militias, the Houthis there starting up, thinking about that waterway. So, I mean, at the end of the day, in some ways, this is kind of a global issue, but I think that's part of why we're doing this. I mean, you think about the Russia-Ukraine war, too. That is direct ties here.
it might be part of finishing the job too.
Well, yeah, that's actually a good point. You know, it's interesting. I'm watching this this show right now. We just started a couple weeks ago on Apple TV Plus called Tehran, and it's in its second season, or it's had two seasons. But the reason that I bring it up is that you know, and they filmed it in Greece, so they didn't film it in Iran. But look, Tehran is like 10 million people, right? That's 10 million people there, and we don't have a good sense of what is happening inside Iran, like inside Tehran with all those people. How are they being affected? Are they getting crushed with, you know, the economy and inflation? Because we've heard, and I think it's true, that the economic blockade has been successful. But I mean, Jacob, we just don't get any good sense of what's happening inside that country, do we? I'm sure the CIA does, but for the most part, the rest of us don't.
No, Mark, you're exactly right. And I think they've just kind of passed new laws there about prohibitions on speaking to foreign press there. Look, I mean, two things here. First of all, well, the people have been crushed for five decades under this regime is the broader context. But the other piece that you bring up, I mean, look, we have some of the images of the funerals there, of some of the leadership that had been taken out. There are still constituencies there of the regime supporters. And I think that's part of the reality when we talk about what happens next and why I believe it's so wise of the president not to make that an objective of U.S. policy here. I mean, that, first of all, is not the focus. I mean, the focus is eliminating the threat to the American people, which is his responsibility as commander-in-chief, which he has achieved in large part. But the other part is that it's just so complex as a country. It's a much bigger country than anything we've been engaged in recently. And so, and I think fundamentally, so it's worth kind of taking it one step at a time from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's just so complicated. You're great at explaining all this, though, Jacob. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. I appreciate
Thanks,
it. Mark. All right,
Thanks
yeah, you take care. You know, Sue, today is the day that George from Throttleneck comes on and scares the living daylights out of people. We call that Tech Talk Tuesday. That's coming up
wow.
in the next hour. It's amazing how many listeners say that to me.
Oh, man, me too.
I can barely listen to that because he scares me so much. But he's got, you know, I mentioned this earlier, he's got five topics for us today. We might get to like one and a half because there's always so much to talk about. Now, this is sort of AI related. I thought this was interesting. Look, I've been a person that for decades has said, why don't we focus on nuclear power in this country
yes.
and build nuclear reactors like we used to? Well, of course, the Sierra Club, the alarmists and all that, they've kept that from happening. But that's put us in a bit of a pickle, if you will, especially when it comes to data centers and AI. So in the Wall Street Journal this morning, they have a story about what's happening in Butte County, Idaho. They say one of the most hyped products in the energy market is an excavation pit scattering dust in the high desert of the Snake River Plain, where nuclear startup Oklo, I think it's always OKLO, maybe it's Oklo, is building one of America's first new reactors in a generation.
Wow.
And what they say is there's renewed interest in nuclear power that is colliding with the mania over artificial intelligence. And at that lab in particular, it's a remote site. It's out of, the desert in the Idaho area, but it's twice the size of Los Angeles. Okay.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So that
Whoa.
Campus, I mean, think about that. The Idaho National Laboratory Desert Campus is twice the size of Los Angeles.
Holy cow.
So what they're doing is they're hoping to drive an AI revolution and a nuclear renaissance that powers the American economy for decades to come. But the story points out that there's, you know, a lot of challenges here. There's no developers outside of China and Russia that have yet completed a commercial version of what's known as an SMR, that is a small modular reactor. And the guy who is the founder of Oklo says we're finally in build mode and not kind of playing games around the edges. And this is huge because if they have success in Idaho, it's a big step toward what they're going to do to provide energy and electricity to Meta and the Meta platforms, right? So that's a lot of AI there. Oklo plans to build more than a dozen reactors at an Ohio campus that could generate up to 1.2 gigawatts. Sounds like, you know, going back to the future. 1.2 gigawatts of electricity, Sue, is enough to power 1,200 Walmarts.
Wow.
So that's pretty
interesting. Well, we need the power. So.
Well, we do. And, you know, I think that this is going to be the way. You also have these water loops like we have in St. Louis that can provide power. But it's St. Louis's own Sam Altman who kind of took Oklo public. And there's a lot of competitors out there. I guess they say in this story that the World Nuclear Association tracks more than 130 SMR designs that are in development globally. So it's happening. They show that there's one that's happening in Illinois. Texas has a couple, Ohio, Michigan, and then out there in Idaho, and I think a couple other states out west. But it is interesting, and I guess the revenue from power generation is years away. When it comes to building nuclear plants, we're not very good at it because we're rusty. America's last new reactors, two big AP1000s, they call them, Sue. Those sound like collector's editions, don't they?
Yes.
Westinghouse Electric built those. They came online in 23 and 24, $20 billion over budget, 7 years behind schedule.
Whoa.
So that's not something we seem to excel in doing, but it does seem like we're probably going to have to get better at this. And it's the big tech companies that are trying to solve this. They have to, right? They need secure power. These data centers can guzzle as much energy as a city. So Jeez. That's the challenge that they have right now. And all the big companies, whether it's Google or Amazon or whatever, they're trying to pair with these companies. And they offer in this Wall Street Journal piece kind of an interesting side-by-side. So with a traditional nuclear reactor, we have one in Missouri. We have one in Fulton. You can see it from I-70. There's 94 reactors in the U.S. that provide about 20% of the nation's electricity. The most recent reactors, again, went online in 23 and 24. But as I pointed out, the cost soared well past $30 billion. And a reactor that I mentioned was going to be in Michigan, that's going to restart later this year. I think they may have run out of money. But on the SMRs, which is the small modular reactor, that's what they're, you know, kind of going to focus on here for AI, factory-built components assembled on-site to reduce construction times. SMRs could connect to the grid to be used for industrial heat or to power remote communities or data centers. And then there's micro reactors. I think they might be doing a micro reactor at Mizzou. There was something that they're doing there, but that's the smallest reactor. And they say that's not something that you can connect to the grid. They can use that for the military, for remote communities following natural disasters and things like that. But it's something to track on. And I think that it's something that needs, you know, attention to move forward in this country. But again, man, 7 years behind schedule, $30 billion cost overrun. I think someone's going to have to fix that, right?
Yes.
That sounds like the high-speed rail in California, which will never, ever get finished. All right, we take a break here at the top of the hour. Have not spoken with my good friend and very passionate reformed liberal, Batya Ungar-Sargon, for a while. She hosts the show Batya on News Nation. She's always full of fire and opinion. She's going to join us right after 5. And then I mentioned George, Tech Talk Tuesday. Couple of topics there. There's Meta Child Safety and a trial that's underway in California. We're going to talk about how hackers are using small vendors to hit you. And then the AI job hunt versus AI resume screeners. That's kind of interesting as well. It's all coming up on Tech Talk Tuesday.
Get more at 971talk.com.